There haven't been many Republican state treasurers in recent history, but State Senator Eric Schmidt is hoping to reverse that trend and take the statewide office into the Republican fold. The Republican from Glendale joins us on another edition of Politically Speaking.
9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
I think that is fair
as
to
I say. Hands to kiss and babies to shake.
But I think my record speaks for itself.
That's a really good question.
Hello and welcome to the Politically Speaking podcast. I'm your host, Jason Rosenbaum, a reporter with St. Louis Public Radio. Joining me in studio in St. Louis is
colleague Joe Manis.
And returning to the podcast for the fourth time, joining John Deal, Scott Sifton, and Joe Kevney in that esteemed club we have as our special guest.
Eric Schmidt. I was actually the very first person
That's right.
to do the podcast.
He was the very first one when we started having guests.
Someone else canceled, I think, is probably the real story.
No, actually it was not. We were deciding who'd get on. But this is when we decided to try guests. There was about a year and a half when we didn't have guests, and I'm sure nobody remembers any of those shows.
It's been a couple years, a few years.
It's been since 2013. We recently went over the 200 guest plateau, and we had a quiz to celebrate it. The winners of that quiz are being talked
tabulated
to right now. But one of the questions was, who is the first guest? And you were the answer to that question.
Made the cut. Very proud.
So you are the Republican nominee for state treasurer. Usually on this show, we would talk about how arduous your primary was, but you didn't have a primary. So we're going to skip ahead of that and talk about what you would want to do in the state treasurer's office. For our listeners, we recorded a show with Democrat Judy Baker. It should be on our site right now. And we want to give our listeners a sense of who these candidates are. The state treasurer's race usually doesn't get a huge amount of attention because president, U.S. Senate, governor, and even attorney general are ahead of it. But it's a really important office.
Right.
And we want to give the voters as much information as possible. So I'll ask a very simple question. Why do you want to be the state's treasurer? And what would you bring to the office if you're elected
November? That's a good question. I get asked that a lot, actually, on the trail. The last 6 years, I've chaired the Economic Development Committee in the Senate and have worked on, I think, a lot of important pieces of legislation that can move our economy forward. I want to continue that. I also... the ads have started here in this cycle, but for me, if you just sort of step back, at the end of the day, I'm a dad. I'm a sixth generation Missourian, but I come from a very middle class working family. My grandfather came back from World War II, started a butcher shop with an eighth grade education in St. Anne off St. Charles Rock Road. My dad worked in that butcher shop, went to night school. I saw how hard he worked when I was young. He ended up working at Anheuser-Busch 7 days a week, the midnight shift. So that work ethic was installed in me. And when I became a father, my son was diagnosed with some pretty severe medical issues. And I just came to a conclusion sometime around 2006, 2007 that I wanted to do more. And that led me to run for office the first time. It's that same desire that has led me to want to run for statewide office. I think the treasurer's office can be uniquely situated to be an advocate for economic growth. And at the end of the day, that's really, really important. As I've got around the state, there is a determination in people's eyes, but they know we can do better. And I think the treasurer's office, in addition to the functions of the office, which I'm sure we'll talk about, the day-to-day functions, can really be an advocate and a thought leader for economic growth.
Now, you've brought up an issue that actually Sarah Steelman had pushed when she was state treasurer, which has to do with terrorism and whether or not any of the state funds should be invested in firms or funds where some of the money may come from certain other countries or Middle Eastern countries or companies that do business with those companies. Can you talk about this? Because some of the critics say this is really all about just Republicans raising the terror flag, and it really doesn't really have anything to do with economic development. So can you talk a little bit about
that? Sure. So 10 years ago, Sarah Steelman was the first treasurer in the country to institute a terror-free investment policy in the treasurer's office. Since then, more than 30 treasurers have followed suit. So it has had a significant impact in addition to some of the sanctions, national sanctions that we have as it relates to investment in state sponsors of terrorism. There are only three countries on that list. So you could be pretty bad to be on that list. It's Iran, Sudan, and Syria. And to be a state sponsor of terror, what that means is you are giving money and arms to terrorists to kill American soldiers and American citizens. So it's a pretty significant designation that's given by the State Department. And so Sarah Steelman was the first. And the reason why I believe that it's very relevant in this race is because about a year ago, the president negotiated the Iran deal. In the Iran deal, in addition to those sanctions being lifted, literally hundreds of billions of dollars now flow into that country by way of investments. You literally have hundreds of billions being flown in the belly of cargo planes and cash to release hostages. I mean, that deal, in my view, did nothing to dismantle the nuclear infrastructure of the number one state sponsor of terrorism, which doesn't believe Israel should exist and chants death to America, and they really, really mean it. Why is that relevant to the Treasurer's office? Well, there's a paragraph in that deal, paragraph 25, that was specifically negotiated by the Iranians to undermine these state divestiture policies because they're working. They're working. These sanctions were actually really, really working. And if you think about it, the hundreds of billions of dollars that are on the sidelines through investment policies that the states control that aren't going to companies that do business with Iran has had an impact. So they negotiated it, ended up in the Iran deal. So now state treasurers are going to be on the front lines of whether or not that policy changes or not, or how it's impacted or how it's effectuated. That is a difference between me and my opponent. My opponent supports the Iran deal. My opponent is perfectly fine with dollars flowing to companies that do business with Iran. And I don't think, and I on this campaign trail, I haven't met a single person that thinks it's a good idea that their tax dollars would go to entities that do business
now,
with Iran.
Now, specifically, you were quoted in numerous media outlets saying that Boeing should have their tax credits, which, by the way, I believe you sponsored this tax credit bill in special session because Boeing is thinking of doing a passenger jet deal with Iran. Now, as you alluded to, your Democratic opponent, Judy Baker, criticized you for taking this stance, thinking that you shouldn't provide tax credits to somebody and then yank them away when you don't like a certain business deal that they're doing. I'd like you to respond to her and give listeners a sense of why you even made that stance in the first place.
Sure. My record on job creation, I'm very proud of. In fact, in 2011, I sponsored a resolution to support the F-18, which right now the Boeing jobs in St. Louis are military aircraft. But an opportunity came up for us to compete for passenger wing production that ultimately we went into special session. Ultimately, Boeing decided to keep most of those jobs in Washington. There are a few hundred jobs that might be transitioning here because of some of the work that we did to fight. And I worked with business and labor leaders to get that done. That was in 2013. Right now, Boeing is seeking to do a deal with Iran. The Treasurer's office doesn't administer those tax credits. I mean, they don't administer the tax credits. I was asked a question by a reporter about how I felt about those credits. And I have been very consistent. I don't think any tax dollars should go to any company that does business with a state sponsor of terrorism. My opponent has gone so far as to not only support that, but I'm not sure she fully understands not only the Iran deal in that paragraph 25, which is central to this defund Iran plan, but even the existing policy. And I don't think she even believes that that policy extends to companies that do business with Iran. It does. I think she is recently on your show said that I want to go extend the policy to deal with companies. That's already the existing investment policy of the state. And so what I've been very focused on is making sure that that investment policy remains intact even in light of this Iran deal.
Well, might that threaten Boeing jobs in Missouri if you as treasurer take steps to either punish Boeing or say bad things about them or as far as the state investments? Or like if they do need tax credits, granted, it's up to the General Assembly, but the treasurer often, has an influential role behind that.
Well, the legislature would have to pass a law to deal with that. But I've been very consistent. I just don't think any company can choose to make a decision to do, in my view, a very risky deal with the number one state sponsor of terrorism in the world. What remains to be seen is whether or not that deal is actually even going to go through. In Congress, they're seeking assurances that those passenger planes won't be used to transport troops. I mean, there's a lot of hurdles. The financing, right. EXIM may still have to finance it or they won't. So there's a lot of hurdles for that ultimately to happen because it's such a risky deal in the sense that there's only three countries on that list. And people ought to be very wary about doing business with Iran. But as far as state tax dollars go, I doesn't matter what company it is. I just don't think taxpayers should be footing the bill for that.
Now, how do you think the current treasurer, who's just finishing up his second term, Clint Zweifel, who's a Democrat, do you think he's been doing enough on this? I mean, when you're looking at the investment portfolio that the state has now, how would your policy change that at all, or would it be simply keeping things as they are and just not adding stuff?
Well, to be fair, this is an emerging issue that hasn't really played out yet because the Iran deal is so new, and there really haven't been any companies that have done business with Iran. So this is an emerging issue that will probably play out when the next treasurer gets sworn in. And so I just think people ought to know, taxpayers ought to know that their treasurer isn't going to be using their money to find its way to state sponsors of terror. So we'll be very vigilant on this point. But really, it's a continuation, quite frankly, of the existing policy in light of the Iran deal.
So I want to talk to you about some of the boards that you're going to serve on if you're state treasurer. One of the things that you would be a part of is pensions, because the state treasurer has a seat on the, I think, the state pension board, Mosers. And just for full disclosure, and I disclosed this on the other podcast, I am an employee of the University of Missouri, St. Louis, and so is Joe. So if we work here long enough, we will be in the state pension program. So I wanted to put that disclosure up to our listeners. But what would be your philosophy toward pensions? Obviously, you wouldn't be able to drastically transform it on your own. There are other people on that board. But, you know, what would you want to do in that sphere, which is very important to lots and lots and lots of Missourians who are state employees?
I mean, my record is being, you know, I'm a fiscal conservative, and I would take that proven track record to the Mosers board. The treasurer is one of the board members that sits on there along with some other folks that are appointed, you know, by the governor. And I just think that we need to be very mindful of, you know, making sure we get a solid return, but also being realistic with where we're at and being taking a very conservative approach. So that's, you know, that's something that I intended, that philosophy and that background, take to that position.
Now, one of the things that's, and this has been an issue since back before the primary, one of the reasons that some say you didn't have a primary is that, I mean, you are a well-funded candidate, but a lot of your money has come from very few people. Do you want to discuss that at all or talk about that and your thoughts about Amendment 2, which would make that no longer the case, not just for you, but anybody running for office from Koster and Greitens on down?
Yeah, I think, as I've been consistent, I think on the second part first, the transparency is the most important element, I think. And if it's disclosed, people can make their decisions. As relates to my support, I'm very proud of the support that I've gotten. You know, even outside of the contribution you're speaking of, we've raised probably $2.5 million from other Missourians who support my candidacy. My opponent has not been able to gain traction on that front, just not gotten, you know, support in that way. And I'm proud of that. I mean, that's a lot of hard work. That's a lot of meeting with people. That's a lot of people, you know, knowing who you are and what you're about and wanting to support you. And that ranges from a broad spectrum of folks, from, you know, folks in the business community who've seen all the work they've done to regular folks that I meet out on the trail who are proud that somebody's going to run as a conservative in that office. It's a very important office, as Jason mentioned. I think it's important you have a real fiscal watchdog in that place right now.
Going back to pensions for a moment, you voted for a major overhaul of pensions in 2010, which I think, among other things, state employees have to contribute a certain amount of money. I think there's a certain amount of time that you would have to have in order to qualify for a state pension, which is a defined benefit,
correct,
not like a 401k.
Right.
Again, you wouldn't be the only person who would make decisions on that, but would you want to see any other major structural changes to how pensions are administered in Missouri more than what happened in 2010?
Yeah, I think my record in general has been one of a reformer, in the sense that whether it was autism insurance reform or tax reform or municipal court reform, those are the things that I've gotten involved with. Back in 2010, there was significant pension reform that I think, you know, basically saved taxpayers about $800 million over the course of about 10 years or so based on that, which was basically that new hires would pay in a percentage to keep that solvent. And that is going to be a continuing challenge for us. And so, you know, I intend to, again, continuing to look at that to make sure that we keep the promises that have been made to people that are in that system.
Now, one of the other boards that you're going to serve on is a board that administers low-income housing tax credits. Now, this is an incentive that has been the source of immense controversy, not only on the board in particular that you would serve on, but also in the legislature. There have been some conservative Republicans who have wanted to curtail that tax credit along with the historic preservation tax credit. There's also a lot of just ordinary people, low-income seniors and low-income individuals who feel it's an incredibly important incentive to get housing. So if you're serving on that board, what's going to be your mindset toward providing that incentive to entities that want it, essentially?
Yeah, I've I don't know if I've mentioned this on one of the three other podcasts before, but my political hero growing up was Jack Kemp.
I think you did.
And he was this happy warrior, and he also would get involved in issues that maybe Republicans traditionally wouldn't get involved with, or go into rooms that Republicans wouldn't traditionally get in.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to interview him several times over about 15 years.
And he has helped guide some, in my view, some of the issues that I get involved with, whether it's lower taxes, but also issues related to poverty. I was the first Republican to sponsor the Earned Income Tax Credit, first Republican in the history of the Senate to do that this year, and it got some traction, I think. Issues related to poverty and making sure people have opportunity and creating an opportunity society is really, really important. And Republicans, I think, need to continue to talk about those things as it relates to a broad spectrum of folks in that tent. Making sure you have affordable housing is part of that. I think in that board, though, in particular, an area of focus for me will be making sure that individuals with disabilities have affordable community-based housing. The model of, you know, sort of putting people away, it doesn't exist anymore, and it's illegal. And so as the father of a son who is nonverbal and depends on my wife and I for everything, it's a very personal issue for me. And those are the things that keep me up at night, like what's going to happen to Stephen when I'm gone. And I'm going to carry that life experience as I have in the General Assembly, but also to that board and making sure that there are quality options available for individuals with disabilities.
If the legislature tries to make major cuts to low-income housing, whether it puts a tighter cap on how much can be doled out every year, I mean, that would be the legislature's decision, but you could still use the bully pulpit to make your views known. How would you react to something like that? Because that's obviously been proposed before.
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of relationships, and I actually think it can be a benefit for me serving in that office to try to move an agenda with my colleagues that I just served with that happen to be in a supermajority, and I don't think that's going to change anytime soon.
I don't think so.
Outside of a race here or there. But I think that, you know, we've got to have a balance, and I think that in many ways, making sure that people have opportunities, they have affordable housing options will be important. But I'm certainly weigh in. I've dealt with a lot of those issues already in the General Assembly and chairing the committee, and I hope to bring that experience to the office as well.
Now, if you become state treasurer, are there things that you're going to deal with at the very beginning? I mean, 'cause there's some nuts and bolts stuff, but then other things aside from the these boards that we've been talking about. What is your objective when you first come in, if you become treasurer?
Well, we talked about the tariff-free investing. That's been a focus.
Correct.
I think that treasurers across the country have led on transparency initiatives. In Ohio, for example, Treasurer Mandel came in town with us on a campaign stop to talk about something they have called Ohio Checkbook. So whether we call it Missouri Checkbook or Show Me Checkbook, to really have an online, easily accessible way for people to look at what government expenditures are. And I think that can lead to a lot of reforms and really carrying my work on municipal court reform as you look at some of the, you know, whether it's taxation by citation or some of the abuses, to really kind of ferret that out, but also work with local governments on that too. The Missouri ABLE Act is something that's coming online. It's a bill that I passed in 2015 that is a way for families to save for the long-term needs of a loved one with a disability like they would for college, like the 529 MOST program, which the Treasurer's Office also administers.
Yeah, in fact, I was going to ask you about that.
So those two, you know, being the first generation to go to college right out of high school, education attainment's really important. I've seen that in my work as chairman of the Economic Development Committee. You need to have an educated workforce. So the 529 plan is a direct connection to that, to higher ed and making sure people are achieving the American dream. But also, again, getting back, we did our Missouri ABLE Act tour with our Special Needs Coalition. It's something that's not really been done before, but we're building alliances with those providers, with those families, to make sure they're aware of this new program coming online that, again, gives hope and independence to people who are really looking forward, who have been dealt challenges that most typical folks haven't.
Well, let's stay on the MOST program for a second. Again, I got to do full disclosure. I have a Most account, and I have I have a 2.5-year-old son that I hope will utilize that one day. Mm-hmm. So how do you want to make that particular program more available to Missourians? Because it seems like a really good way to save for college, but it doesn't seem like it's been widely adopted by a lot of people for various reasons. What would you do to change that status quo if that's actually true?
You're right. There's about 3% of Missourians are enrolled in 529,
really?
Which is a low number. And so we've got a long way to go to make sure people are aware of it. So I think education
Why
is
do you
part
think
of
it is so low, and what can the Treasurer's Office do to improve that?
I think you got to raise awareness. I think you can also be creative in building partnerships with community banks to maybe help seed some accounts. I mean, leverage the office, because we have so many community banks that are so invested in their communities around the state, to partner with them with 529 college savings. But I also think the awareness of it, and not just the money that will help pay for ever-escalating college expenses, but it's also the hope and the expectations that can be put in place. I, you know, working on some education issues over the last 8 years, I got a chance to tour the KIPP Academy in St. Louis here. And one of the things I think that they do really well is they have every classroom is named after a university. And there's these very subtle reminders that this is achievable. And again, I come from a family, my dad worked very hard. I was the first generation to go for college. I can appreciate how important a college degree is. And even if it's not a college degree, making sure people are placed, whether it's a two-year degree or a trade school, there's a lot of jobs that there's need for those kinds of skills. And I think that the 529 can be a great connection point between, you know, a lot of the work I've done with businesses over the past several years as chairing that committee, with real people that we've tried to work with too, to connect everyone so that they know that there's a way to save that's going to allow their kid to achieve the American dream. So I think awareness is where you start, and just continuing some of the work that's been done. But also, I will say this too, again, getting back to something. We started one when my son Stephen was born. Mm-hmm. A very painful sort of realization. You know, he's nonverbal. Stephen's probably not going to go to college. So we transferred that to my daughter. I think these ABLE accounts are a great way for folks to cross the spectrum of abilities to be able to save for a loved one when they're not there, whether it's them going to college or them having greater independence when they're not around. And so, you know, timing gifts for grandparents during the holiday season. There's a lot of things that I think you can be creative with so people are aware of it, and these are funded.
What do you think the biggest difference is between you and your Democratic opponent in this race?
Well, my opponent has run for several offices in the last decade. When she served in the House, I don't think she passed a single bill. I think my record is one of accomplishment. Major reforms, autism insurance reform, two of the largest tax cuts in the history of the state, municipal court reform that was hailed by this governor as the most significant municipal reform in the history of the state. There's that. When she was handpicked by President Obama to implement Obamacare in Missouri in 2009, that coincided with my efforts to lower taxes. So her record is pushing a disaster of Obamacare in Missouri. She was, you know, some people get, there's a lot of discussion about people voting for some semblance of that in legislature. She literally was chosen as a true believer to implement this in Missouri. I think that's a stark contrast. You talk about if you like your plan, you can keep it. That was not true. Skyrocketing healthcare costs, skyrocketing premiums, higher taxes. This is the legacy of Obamacare, and my opponent implemented Obamacare. So I was working to try to lower the tax burden. That's what my opponent was doing.
Okay, I'm going to just play devil's advocate here. I'm not defending anything, but just, okay. The general consensus is, even if Obamacare, quote, wasn't around, that insurance premiums would still be high. You'd have millions of people who would not be able to get insurance because of pre-existing conditions. I know a number of people that are in that category. There is some of the provisions that people like, including Roy Blunt, who had promoted this one provision about letting people stay on their letting young people stay on their family plans till they're 26. Granted, technically, you know, it's not part of the Treasurer's Office, but you're bringing it up as one of the key issues in the race. So how would things have been different if people were still going to be paying sky high premiums anyway?
Well, don't listen to me. Listen to Bill Clinton, I guess.
Well, we're not.
Who, by his own admission, called it a disaster.
Talking about certain things he thinks need to be done.
I think Missourians have rejected it twice. It's been on the ballot essentially twice, whether it was the exchanges or Prop C, I think it was, Prop B.
Well, what do you think the state should have done? I mean, if well, you were, ex- well, we since rejected you brought
the,
it up.
Yeah, we rejected the exchanges that are collapsing. Okay. I think empowering individuals to make more healthcare decisions through HSAs is a good place to start. Those were eviscerated by Obamacare, health savings accounts. And then you also have a situation now where you have fewer options. And by the way, the promises that were made about, you know, if you like your plan, you don't ever have to really switch over, is proven to be untrue. So at every stage, you know, Nancy Pelosi said that we'll have to, you know, after we vote on it, we'll find out what's in it. I mean, the litany of the parade of terribles associated with Obamacare, we could probably spend a whole show on it. But I think in a nutshell, it's left fewer options for people and a higher tax burden.
Yeah, well, because I'm just kind of wondering, because, I mean, you're a smart guy. So, I mean,
thank you.
I mean, you know, and so, but my point being that insurance costs would be going up anyway.
I think
if this is a campaign issue.
Well, you know, Jason asked what are some of the differences.
Right.
And I think my time trying to lower the tax burden and work on real reforms, that's what my opponent was doing. That's why I brought it up.
How many bills did Clint Zweifel pass when he was in the legislature?
I don't know, but you know, I've worked with a lot of Democrats that passed.
I think it was zero, and that didn't matter to Missouri voters. They still elected him over Brad Lager and Cole McNary. So I'm just curious why that matters in this particular contest.
I think it relates. Look, I've worked with a lot of Democrats that have had good ideas that have passed a lot of bills.
Wasn't it harder with Republican majority if it was the other way?
Of course. But if that were true, no Democrat would ever pass a bill. And that's not the record of some. But at the end of the day, you know, focusing on what I think I have done, I have really in the last 8 years worked on a lot of the really big issues that affect the state. And I'm proud of that. And again, whether it's tax cuts, autism insurance reform, municipal court reform, you know, I have worked with my colleagues across the, you know, created bipartisan coalitions to get these things done. I'm proud of that record. I just think that's one difference between me and my opponent.
And by the way, Treasurer Zweifel, if you did end up passing a bill during your time in the Missouri House, you are free to come on this show and laugh at me and make fun of me.
Well, he's been on before.
And we talked earlier, he probably will be coming on before he leaves office. Let's talk about kind of the campaign in the national environment. One of the big things that typically determines the results of down ballot statewide races like this is the national environment. And it is, what is it, 15 days to
go? Chaotic. Let's just say it's chaotic.
Yeah, 15 days.
I'm not going to mince words. It looks pretty bad for Republicans right now. Things could change. I'm sure that's what you're going to say.
Things could change, and I think the polls are all over the map. But I want to be fair here.
Yeah, I want to be fair here, but when your presidential nominee is slated to lose Arizona, Georgia, North Carolina, possibly Utah, maybe even Texas, that wasn't even the case in 2008 when your opponent almost won a Republican congressional seat. I'm just curious how that's going to affect your ability to win this race when it appears your presidential nominee, which has a big effect on your race, is collapsing right now.
Well, the biggest effect on my race, obviously, is Missouri and how Missourians feel about me running for state treasurer.
Sure.
I think a Republican nominee is going to win Missouri. The question is by how much? Sure.
And
whether that's closer to 5 or 12. And that's
correct. If it's 5 or less, the predictions have been that does make it more difficult for down ballots, but it depends on the race,
sure,
just like you say.
And look, there have been, I think this is going to be a very good year for Republicans on the statewide ticket. You can't say that the last, you know, few cycles. And in fact, but I will say this is what's interesting, and you guys would appreciate this.
Sure.
It's the first time in a generation, literally a generation in 24 years, where every single statewide office that's up this year will have a new occupant.
Yep.
And that is a unique opportunity to kind of reset where the state is headed. And I am really excited about being a part of that. If the voters elect me to really come in as the chief financial officer of state, somebody that has a track record on tax reform, to talk about where Missouri is going to be in 10 years, there's a ton of opportunity. One of the things that I've learned, you know, running statewide is the diversity of this state. I mean, in the Boot Heel, they grow everything except citrus. So they're growing rice. You go to Northwest Missouri and they're wind farms. That's a tremendous opportunity for us, especially as the Panama Canal is widening. The Mississippi River is going to be as important as it's been in 100 years. Us getting goods to market quicker. There's tremendous opportunity. And my favorite story about Missouri and why this opportunity has existed for a long time is Carr, the czar of the valley, when there was the New Madrid earthquake, bought all that land in the Boot Heel. And when Missouri was petitioning to be a state, He went to Congress and wanted to be in Missouri, not in Arkansas. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why you don't want to be in Arkansas, but one of them was there is great opportunity in this state, and that remains to be the case. But we need leaders and who see that opportunity and are willing to fight for it. And that's why I'm running.
Full disclosure, my mom went to high school in Arkansas. But
sorry, Jason. You're from everywhere. I see the tweets about Chicago and Tampa Bay. I can never figure this out.
I will just say this before Joe asked her question. One of my proudest family accomplishments is the fact that my mother graduated from Little Rock Central High School, one of the first integrated high schools in the South. It is something that is deeply prideful for me. Yeah. Continue, Joe.
Okay. So, but now a lot of the Republican candidates, including you, have been traveling around together, mm-hmm. which is something, it hasn't got a lot of notice. I mean, because frankly, we're all swamped writing stuff, but I'm trying to do more on that. But this reminded me of 92. Mel Carnahan did that. Now, in that case, they were flying around. And they did do a bus trip in 96, which I was on, which is a whole other thing. But the point was that Mel Carnahan did a big thing of having all the Democratic office holders and candidates traveling around together. Now, they're doing it this time. Who instigated this and sort of what's been the dynamic? If you're traveling around with some of the other Republicans running for statewide office.
I think there's a lot of energy. I mean, I really do. I think people sense that it's a big year. There's a lot at stake. You know, we can have a Republican governor. You can have Republican lieutenant governor, secretary of state, treasurer, attorney general. All that's very achievable this year. And everybody brings different talents, and each office is very different. But I think obviously the personalities that are running will help drive an agenda. But I think there's a great amount of excitement. The crowds have been bigger. I mean, we did kind of the Lincoln Day tour. Uh-huh. That sort of dominates right. The spring. Then you get around, and we've been very active with having our own events, but also partnering with folks. And so it's great. I think it's going to be a great year.
Now, you've been, as I said, traveling on the bus with Roy Blunt, mm-hmm. particular, who's running for re-election in the Senate, which is one of the most closely watched Senate races in the country, and right now is considered one of six. Mm-hmm. that are being targeted by both parties big time.
Big league. It's big
right.
league. It'll always be big league to me, but continue.
Now,
Joe.
So I'm just interested. I mean, what's your assessment about, I mean, I've no Blunt, but I'm interested in your thoughts about him since he, I would say, is probably the leader of this bus tour because he's the most veteran on there.
I am, I suppose, relatively young at 41. On the ticket. And I think that's actually interesting, too, the statewide ticket running the state. Everybody, except for Senator Parson, everybody's under the age of 45 on the Republican mm-hmm. side. So it's interesting. But traveling around with Senator Blunt, he is the hardest working candidate I've ever been around. I mean, he goes to everything. He relates with folks. He works really hard. He's been somebody that has worked really hard for Missouri. I think their hashtag is Roy Delivers. He really has worked across the aisle with Democrats and his colleagues in a leadership position to work on behalf of average everyday ordinary Missourians. And so he's doing a great job. I think he's going to win. It's a spirited race. There's no question about that. But I think what sticks out to me is how hard he works every single day.
Now, if you win, I mean, there are a lot of people. You've been on short lists of ending up running for governor or something down the road. Would you be looking at that right away or kind of no. Have you made a promise about things?
I am solely focused on this race. And my wife keeps me very grounded in this whole process. So I'm very focused on winning the treasurer's race and actually doing good work in that office for all the reasons that we talked about here earlier today and all the things that I want to do in the first 100 days and throughout the term.
And my final question is, you mentioned that you think Donald Trump is going to win Missouri. Would you be comfortable with Donald Trump being president of the United States?
Look, there's no way I can support a third term of Barack Obama. And that is what Hillary Clinton represents from all the issues that are at stake, tax policy, Supreme Court. There's a lot on the line, and there's just no way that I could support four more years of Barack Obama, and that's what Hillary Clinton represents.
Very good. And if, as I said to your opponent, if you win, you get to come back on for
fifth time, possibly the fifth.
There's nobody.
I'm going to run up the score. Can I run up the score here?
Nobody has broken the fifth barrier, and I'm. Should I? I'll explain to him the curse of this after the show.
Yeah, but hey, there's the upside too, because we're all history buffs, and in fact, I'm going to talk to him about Hamilton if we get after we get off the air. Because I'm going to Chicago soon.
Absolutely. We've had some great conversations about, there's only been two Republican state treasurers since Prohibition. One of them is Wendell Bailey, and I know you've always had some great stories about Wendell Bailey.
Some of which I will not tell.
Wendell Bailey After Dark, people. For all of our stories, stlpublicradio.org. Follow me on Twitter at Jay Rosenbaum. Follow Joe on Twitter at
Jay Manis. That's J-M-A-N-N-I-E-S.
And how would we follow you on Twitter?
At Eric_Schmidt, two T's.
The underscore is important there. Until next time, so long.